Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello.
Hello, Devin.
Hello.
All right, Dev. What do you got for us today?
Happy. Just in my swim shorts. Barefooted, wild-haired, in the red fire dark. Singing, swigging wine, spitting, jumping, running. That's the way to live. All alone and free in the soft sands of the beach.
Nice. Man, that's a good one.
Yeah, that is Jack Kerouac. Again, I don't know why we bring him up all the time, but... And that's from the Dharma Bums, which is another great one, but all his stuff is cool.
Was that, Dharma Bums is him just like hitchhiking around? Is that Dharma Bums? Or is...
I mean, that's pretty much all of them. I feel
that's
like.
That's just Kerouac in general.
I forget exactly. Yeah. I think he goes to Mexico for a bit, and I think that's when he was discussing that. He's talking
I like
about
how spitting was in there. Spitting.
Yeah, I like that. Wild hair in the red.
You could do. Yeah.
Singing, swigging wine, spitting, jumping, running. Yeah. I think just being wild sometimes. Obviously, he took it to another level. Most of us cannot. We cannot just leave everything
right.
And go get drunk and sleep on the Mexican beach somewhere. You get robbed. But
that's good. I like that. It's just... and. Pertinent because of it, because it's summer and there are vacations and we're getting ready to head up to Lake George, New York for our annual vacation. And
yeah,
I feel like that quote is kind of, I don't know, the carefreeness of that quote is what I feel about that yearly, the annual vacation that we do, because everyone's just so happy. Everyone's so laid back. It's super easygoing. It's just like, everyone is there to have a good time, and it's so laid back. It's that carefree nature that reminds me of. So,
and there's a security about knowing that you can let loose for a while, right?
Right.
Like no one's everyone knows what they're there. Everyone's going to have fun and be goofy and, you know, maybe drink too much and just have a really good time. And you just know this is what we're doing. It's like, safety in letting loose, being wild.
Right.
I don't think Jack Kerouac ever had that safety, but sometimes you can do that now as hopefully responsible adults.
Right. Yeah, I for I guess the last 2003 or 2004 maybe I started going with my then girlfriend, now wife. Because it's her family's yearly vacation, and for most of those years, we had our dog Sadie for a long time, but she's just never that great off leash, so we wouldn't bring her because, you know, it's just not a great place to have a dog that's off leash. It's just gonna go wandering. But this year we're taking our two new dogs, and so there'll be a little bit of like stress around that because
that's true.
They're just getting used to us and being off leash and on leash. And so it's a little annoying, but you know, that's one of those things you just got to deal with as a dog family. You gotta figure out ways to do it. So
a two dog family.
Yeah. Right. Two dog family. Yeah. And actually, like, I know that, I've talked about this on the podcast, but we have my in-law's dog, Luna, who may or may not become our dog, which is fine. And then we have our new dog, Toby. Luna's a beagle and Toby's a Great Pyrenees. And Luna's better off leash than Toby is. only because she wants to stay around with us more than he does. He does. He likes to stay around with us, but he also likes to wander and explore. So it's actually better with them together because he'll like go with her. So when we're together, you know, she'll stay around a little bit better and he'll stay with her most of the time. Sometimes he'll wander and
I also think he'll get close to you guys when he gets close to you guys. You know what I mean? After a year or two.
Right. Yeah.
Some dogs are different. Some dogs don't care and they'll just walk away from you. That's how our dog Gomer was. Right, he loved being near us, but he would slowly sneak away and go, you know, visit some neighbors.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's how Sadie always was. She always loved to run off, so we always had to keep her on the leash. But
yeah.
We're trying to avoid doing that with the new dogs, but we'll see.
We had two dogs. It's about a half mile to where I dropped the trash out. Where I dropped the trash off from my house to the end of the lane. And I had these two dogs that were always, one was nastier. And one kind of hung back but would bark with him, you know? He was just his buddy.
Right.
Yeah, or I always thought they were nasty because they just would, like, bark and bark and bark and, like, get close and, like, follow you. You know, it was just kind of annoying. And some of those type of dogs, and they were always, like, they were always, like, one time I drove home and I saw him on the main road both ripping into a deer carcass in the middle of the road.
Oh my gosh.
Like these beasts, like these things are wild. I had to like go to the house. I was like, hey, your dog they're eating like a dead deer in the middle of the road. I stopped in the middle of the road. And I was honking trying to get off them, but they were just going to town. I was like, oh my gosh. Jeez. So they're kind of wild dogs. So we just didn't bother with them. And they were very standoffish. If a dog's standing back and barking and barking and barking, he's holding his ground. So I'm not going to run up to him. I'm not going to walk up to him. I just leave him alone.
Right, yeah.
But about a month ago, their owner was out, and I've seen him a few times and talked to him. And so the dogs were out with him. So the dogs, the one that I thought was nastier, he kind of walked up. And then I put my hand down, and he sniffed it, and then he let me pet him. And then once I did that, the other dog came running up super happy. So I guess he's definitely not the alpha. You know what I mean? He's like whatever the tan dog decides, he follows.
Right.
So then they were both sweet. And then today, driving home, I picked up the trash can, threw it in the back of the truck, and there they were barking. But I stood there and just said, hey, pups, you know, whatever.
Right.
And they walked up. we're really sweet and nice. And again, once the tan one walked up, the black one came running over. I was like, oh, okay. And I know, you know, that's how some dogs are. If you don't know them, they're not necessarily going to, that's their job sometimes to watch them, to watch over their land. That's what they do.
Right, exactly. Yeah, definitely territorial. And I mean, that's why, you know, you come up to a house and you knock on the door, even if it's like a screen door or a glass door, dogs will bark, bark, bark. And then you come inside and they're like, oh, you're allowed inside here? Okay, hi, how's it going? You know, real friendly, because then they're like, oh, they're protecting their territory. But then once you're in, then they're like, oh, well, okay, now you're part of the territory. So obviously you're allowed here. So,
So that was kind of surprising. But I mean, I don't give off negative energy either. I always say hi to them, even when they're barking, you know. Hey, dogs, hey. Bark, 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 bark. You just kind of say hey to them, and just. So they came up today.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, one of the things I was a little concerned about was being down in the shop and working and filming and stuff and having the dogs hear us through the floor and bark, you know, not knowing what that voice was. But either so, Devin, you and I were filming today and we were downstairs talking and it was fine. They didn't make any noise about it, but also Corinne was upstairs watching TV, so there was like that background noise on too. So I have a feeling that in the future, if it's just us and there's no noise upstairs, or if I have to put the dogs in the crate when we go down, I'll have to put on the TV or something to like block that noise, because I have a feeling that they would bark if they're like hearing us talking downstairs. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, that's fair. That's
yeah.
Yeah.
But they're like, don't understand what's going on, you know?
Right.
Or they can tell that we're somewhere nearby and they're not with us, which that's the other thing. If we'll put them in the crate, they'll usually bark when we put them in the crate during the day. Like if I need to go out, they'll kind of bark. I hear them barking when we leave, but they stop because when we get home, they're not barking. Eventually. Yeah. I don't know how long it takes, but fortunately, our next closest neighbor is 150 yards away, so they don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. So we finished our second video that hasn't been done yet.
Right.
Yeah. Luckily, we did finally get the other one out.
Yeah.
Did we talk about it the last time? I mean, maybe we did, but the drill doctor thing, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, so we did the drill doctor kind of unboxing setup, how to use it, review type thing. I'm really happy with the drill doctor. That's a really awesome tool, and it did a really, really good job. I mean, obviously, it went from drill bits that wouldn't cut to drill bits that would. So it's a relatively easy thing to set up and use, so I can imagine just it having kind of a spot that's easy, you know, to get to, so that way I can kind of sharpen up a bunch of bits, or if we know we're going to be drilling through some stuff, I'll just sharpen it before I even start, especially on video, because that's been one of those things that we've had to deal with quite often, trying to drill harder stuff. Always trying to figure out how to get through.
That's the biggest thing that has bogged us down.
Yeah, right. It's like, now what do we do? Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. You're like searching for other ones. I think I have this one, and is this the right size? And then that one's taking forever. Then you flip it over, and maybe I'll put some pilot holes in it. And then all of a sudden, it's taken an hour and a half to drill like five holes. It's like,
exactly.
We haven't done anything. Yeah.
So, yes, this will be really nice to have. Be like, oh, that's not cutting, sharpen it up, throw it again.
And of course, with us, we always overplan. Like, oh, we'll drill the holes and we'll do this and we're going to sharpen. Then we'll get in the forge and we'll go outside. And then we get like, we drilled the holes today. All right, I'll see you.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's always something that, you know, like a wrench gets thrown into the mix, and you got to figure out how to get around that first before you can move on to something else in the video. I wouldn't think that this would take this much time. But
yeah, we get the most done the last day.
Right.
As long as everything's glued up, then we just push through. I'm like, we're almost there. Just keep, what's the next? Okay, yeah, keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're there.
You see the finish line.
You get a little boost.
Be like, do we need to talk about this? It's fine. We'll just keep on going. They see it happening. They know what to do. We don't need to tell them what we're doing.
I'm like, you just keep working. I'll get some shots.
Yeah, right. So we were filming today. We just finished up the leather sling for the hatchet that I made for my daughter, the Plum Scout hatchet with the Osage Orange handle. So we made a sling. So it has the mask that fits around it, and then that has attached to it D-rings that then clip to an actual strap that you can put up over your shoulder, so it can be worn across your body and, you know, on your back. So really nice. It's I guess mostly inspired by the ones that are offered by Whiskey River. I think that's where I saw it first, and I was like, that's really nice. Like, that seems like a really, you know, awesome way to be able to carry a hatchet around or an axe around, and not super hard. I mean, I think they sell them for not that expensive, maybe $40 or something. So it's a pretty economical thing to purchase.
Yeah,
maybe I'm wrong, but it's not super expensive, but you know, it's also not that expensive to make it either, you know, for the hardware
The time it takes you to make a clean version of it.
Right. Yeah.
You would definitely be, I mean, obviously, if you're into doing it, then whatever, it's fun to do, and it's just a hobby.
Yeah,
but if you're thinking how much again should I buy it or should I make it? If it's a $40 item, you got to buy the leather, and then you have make sure you have the tools. Then, let's say it's $5-$10 worth of supplies, and then whatever your hourly is, if it takes you 3-4 hours to make it, you know, then it's only $8 an hour.
Yeah, let me see. Okay, it's $65. So that's still a pretty good deal, you know, for the leather sling. And it looks like it's pretty much, it's similar to when I made. It has a stitched welt and rivets, has a snap closure, has the same type of slit in the strap to put the handle through. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's definitely, if you're interested in something like that, it's a great, I mean, it's something that's really nice, especially if you're like, if you're camping and you're going out to get firewood, to be able to carry your hatchet or your axe with you, process a bunch of wood, cut some stuff down, and then put it on your back and carry that wood back.
That's true.
Makes a big difference.
Right.
So I think
that's
really like the best thing for it, is that you can then put it up on your, you know, you put it away so that way you can carry whatever you need to use both your hands. But you know, like you said, also if it's something where you think that you might want to make it yourself, now I have all the tools to do it. So that's one of those things. As a leather worker, I had the tools and I had the leather. I had to buy the hardware. Obviously I had to buy the leather, but I didn't have to buy new leather for it.
Right.
You know, I spent maybe $15 in hardware or something, and then I had everything else to do it. So that's when, you know, it can save money and time. Obviously with filming, it always takes longer, but if that was just me that was 2 days of filming. You know, the first day was prepping all the leather, cutting everything, getting it set and getting it ready to go, dyeing everything, and then the second day was just glue up and put all the hardware on. So not bad.
Yeah, and obviously if you make it, give it to your daughter, she's going to be stuck with that for life. She cannot throw that away. So
right. Yeah. And so it's got to be good, too. Right? It has to look really good and work well.
You're going
to
have your backpack when you go to college, and you're going to have your axe sling and just scare right. away boys.
Speaking of that, if you guys follow us on Instagram, you'll have seen the post that I put up of Corinne throwing the tomahawk. And that was actually a tomahawk that was given to me by my buddy Sean from Crafting a Life I Want. He went up to his in-laws up in New Hampshire recently and got a couple things while he was up there, and got a couple little tomahawk heads, and he gave one of them to me, which is really cool. So I took a old sledgehammer handle and ground and shaped it down to fit for a slip fit into the tomahawk head, because tomahawks have a single taper inside the eye. Most axe eyes, axe eyes are usually an hourglass shape. So they're wide at the top, they're narrow in the middle of the eye, and then at the bottom of the eye, they get wider as well. Now, they're always wider at the top, but they're designed to fit on where you slide the axe down onto the handle, and then you put the wedge in. But a tomahawk is designed with just a single taper inside the eye, so it's wide at the top and narrow at the bottom. Yeah. For that reason specifically, so that way when you make a handle for it, you just slide the handle in from the top of the eye straight down, and then just, you know, centripetal force and momentum keeps that eye on the keeps the axe head on the handle,
right,
which is nice. So I made it with them, and it's like it took a surprisingly long amount of time to make that axe handle. Just I mean, not really, but kind of in my mind, I was like, oh, this should be easy. I'll just grind it down and it'll fit in well. But I also wanted it to be nice and clean and straight, long lines, 16 and a half inches. I didn't want it to be like wobbly or funky going up the handle, and I didn't want the bottom of the handle to get too narrow. So I had to kind of make the bottom of the handle just small enough to fit in, you know, out the bottom of the eye, but not so small eventually, because then I'm keep grinding, so that way the head can move up further. But at the top of the head, you need it to be just wide enough so that way it sits out the top, but not so far that it looks funky either. So all those like little intricacies of like trying to keep it looking clean and nice and all just ended up making me work really slow, which took more time. But I think it may have taken me, I don't know, an hour or so to grind it down in the grinder, which I didn't think it would take me that long, but it worked really well. And Corinne really enjoyed throwing the tomahawk. She had a friend of hers over, and they were out there throwing together. And actually that video of Corinne in slow motion was shot by her friend Catherine, who was over. So she shot the video. She said, "Can I do a slow-mo?" I was like, "That's a great idea." So we did that. That was cool.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So that was cool. It was fun to get down to the shop a little bit and just do some fun stuff. I cleaned that tomahawk head up as well. It just had some like surface rust, so put it on the grinder and then sharpened it up so it would stick. And the tree stump thing that that she's throwing it into is really punky on the outside because it's been sitting there for a bunch of years now. So
what was that word? Yeah.
Punky.
Does that mean just old and holy?
Punky is like, like dried out and soft, maybe.
Okay. Okay, I've never heard that as a description. Yeah. I got you.
Punky wood. Yeah, it's like when it gets, when it just sits out in the sun for a while, the outside of stumps and stuff will get punky because they'll just, they'll, you know, the moisture's gone and they end up kind of just crumbling off.
Hmm.
But yeah, so it's real soft, relatively soft on the outside. So even though that's a light tomahawk, you know, the blade might be 2.5 inches long, maybe 3 inches long. You know, you can get about easily like 2 inches to stick into the wood. So it's not just like just sticking on the blade. It's like short, right, going all the way in, you know. It's a really good stump to like practice throwing and getting your right distance and your right like forms. That way you get the axe head to flip the right way. You know, you don't have to worry about a really sharp or really good, you know, edge geometry to make it stick into the target. You just have to worry about getting your form down and, you know, right, figuring out the distance and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was fun.
Yeah. And we had the old shop elf on the video today. Obviously it's her. So she threw it on and we went outside and got a bunch of nice slow-mo videos. You got walking together and her chopping something down and, you know, all the beauty shots of it hanging on a tree. And then we're looking for somewhere to shoot the thumbnail and how to do it. Wow. Interesting. And we were by the woods. Then on Dustin's property, there's a bunch of buildings and farmhouses and stuff. And not farmhouses, barns. Buildings and barns. And
buildings and barns, yeah.
Right. And so we went up against that. That always makes a nice backdrop, like an old...
Right.
You know, and there was a nice cool... There's like a barn door, so we just did that, Dustin holding it up. And then right when we set up, the sun went away.
Right.
And we're like, ah!
Yeah, and we're so like looked up, and it's like big, gigantic cloud, and we're like, well, that's going to be a while.
Yeah. And then I was looking inside the barn, or you know,
you were asking about what was in there, and yeah, and it's so the property that I'm on, the house that is a house that I rent, and the property which has other, you know, there's another two barns on it, and then a couple outbuildings and a couple little like house shed type things, and they're all locked, but they're, you know, locked to a degree of like farmhouses are locked where there's like latches and things, and so as the tenant here on the property, I'm like the caretaker of the property. And, you know, when things seem awry, I'll let my landlady know, or if like something happens or a tree falls on something, I'll clean up what I can. And, but I've looked into that barn and kind of half gone in, but never really explored it. So that was kind of fun. We went in and walked up and down all the different stalls and stuff. And there's one cool little room that I think they might have used. So my landlady and her husband, who's passed away now, they're both artists and did all sorts of different stuff with metal and leather and painting and drawing and, you know, crafting and art and stuff. So there's a little room with some brass stuff in it and some little tools. And there's like this little teeny tiny hammer, which I guess looked like a miniature hammer. You know, it wasn't like an actual tool that you would use. It was almost like a little mini hammer, miniature hammer that someone made as like a prop for something. So,
yeah,
but it was made out of metal. It's cool. It's like,
an old horse barn, bunch of stalls, and there's it was really cool. And what a beautiful big old barn, like,
yeah. Yeah, we were looking. We knew there was a hayloft area, but we're like, where are the steps? We're like looking around, walking up and down, and we see just like the wooden ladder against the wall, which is really cool because that reminded me of our childhood, the barn in our childhood with that, like, you know, the like wooden ladder against the wall, just straight up, you know, straight on, built onto the wall that goes up. That was cool. So we went upstairs in like the 105 degree upstairs of the barn.
Right.
It was like super hot, but it was cool. Just looked around, nothing up there, but. Yeah, it was a cool space.
Yeah, and then we climbed down and we saw the sun was out. We ran out and got the thumbnails. Everything looked great.
Yeah, I think that was hotter than being up in the barn. Because then I was like, because the sun was out hot, So I was standing in the sun, and I'm standing against the white barn, so it's, like, reflecting heat on me. And then I also have the bounce board, like, shining light in my face, too, and the sun's in my face. And so, fortunately, you weren't actually getting a picture of my face, just, like, mostly my arm holding up the sling. So I was, just, like, closing my eyes. It was so hot, like, radiating from all, like, three different directions. It's, like, just, you probably see in the picture my arms, like, glistening with sweat.
I forget what I was doing, but I had to point a bounce board in my direction a few times. It's always like, oh, this is terrible. I'm always pointing it at people and telling them, like, hey, stop squinting. I said, you know, just like, look at me, look up, stop squinting, good, smile, smile. Like, and I'm looking, I'm like, oh, God, it's like shining right in my face.
Why would anyone do this?
Looks great, but it's brutal.
Yeah, right. Don't squint. That's funny. Yeah, the other, we got that done today, which is good. I have two other things I picked up recently. I got a chain hoist, which is cool, a half-ton chain hoist, so that's it'll lift 500 pounds. I'd been thinking about getting some type of chain hoist or, like, a come-along or, you know, a snatch block type situation thing, you know, block and tackle to be able to lift and move anvils if I need to in the smithy. It's because I can't, you know, the Akio anvil, which is 130 pounds, I can lift that one up and move it around fine. But the other one, the sawmaker's anvil is, you know, 200, 225, something like that pounds. And the other thing I've been thinking would be kind of cool is to get, like, a digital scale so I can actually weigh stuff. And if I do it like a hanging scale, I'd need something to hang it from. So picked up that chain hoist from a guy on Facebook Marketplace or something, which is a cool deal, a nice old one. I think from my research, I think it's from like the 30s maybe, which is kind of cool. So
nice.
I'm not sure what we'll do if we'll do like a restoration of that. Maybe it'll just be like a quick video, you know, like it doesn't have to be like a 100% awesome restoration. It can be just like a, hey, I got this, rusty old chain hoist, you know, that works fine, but it's just like surface rust and stuff, so I could just clean it all and put it together and hang it up in the smithy. Maybe that's the angle, right? It's just like get it working again and hang it up and lift up the big anvil and weigh it or something. Might be kind of cool.
And then the middle of the smithy just collapses in and we're like,
yeah, right. I was thinking that I might have to, like, depending on how I want to hang it or put it where, you know, it's either, if it's not going to be on one of the four main supports around the outside, if it's going to be anywhere in the middle, then it needs to be in, like, I need to put in more supports, you know, like maybe 2x6s or something, maybe two of them to sister it or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the chain hoist is super heavy. You know, the chain hoist is probably
right. And it's,
50
it's
pounds
not,
or something.
It's not going to lift more than 500 pounds, and you and me and another person has been up on that roof.
Right.
Near the same. But it's not going to collapse in on itself.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't know. So we'll see. So I might have to, you know, I've been kind of thinking about what to do if I do that, or if I do like a, I don't know, maybe some type of metal beam or something, or, you know, I don't know, some type of, because you can get I-beams that aren't giant. You know, I can buy a, you know, smaller I-beam. Maybe bolt that across or something. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, it would be nice to have something that kind of, I could actually move it, you know, slide it left or right or something. And then that way I can, you know, move stuff around the smithy a little bit more than just in one spot. But that would be kind of cool. And then the other thing we picked up, I was over Sean's house we were over having dinner with the families and stuff on Friday night. And Sean was kind of flipping through his phone and saw, again, on Facebook Marketplace, a guy who was offering a quarter-inch sheet of steel, 8 feet by 37 inches for $50. So I was like, tell him yes. I was like, I'll go get it tomorrow. I was like, if you want to split it with me, that's cool. If not, I'll be happy to buy it. So Sean and I split it. So we both paid $25, and I got, you know, 4 foot by basically 4 foot by 3 foot sheet of quarter inch steel, which I am using, and right now it's set up in the smithy for like a welding table. So it'll be on top of the metal table that I have out there. So it's just a metal table. So I can, you know, it can be a welding table, but it's also just a metal service table, which is what I needed in the smithy.
How are you going to split it?
I just cut it in half with the grinder.
How long did that take?
That's a good question. Maybe 20 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, 15, 20 minutes maybe. You know, it's quarter inch isn't super thick. Right. You know, if you've seen me grind through stuff with the grinder, the grinding disc, like a bunch of times. So I did what I always do. I, you know, make a bunch of light passes until it's kind of mostly through, and then I kind of work my way up. But
yeah,
I just had it. I pulled it out from the back of the truck, and then, you know, so I had half of it resting on two sawhorses and the other half mostly inside the truck, and then just ground it. I actually took a time lapse video of it on my phone, and it never actually loaded all the way on my phone. It just was like, it just actually it's still saying loading. Unable to load video. And an error occurred while loading a higher quality version of this video. I don't know what that means, but.
Huh.
So unfortunately, it never worked out, but I thought that would have been a fun time lapse, you know, like just be like cutting through this sheet of steel. So,
yeah.
So I have that in the smithy now. The other half of it's in. Other half of it's in the back of the truck still for Sean when I can drop back at his place. But yeah, I thought that was a good find. Even if I ended up using it for other stuff, I mean, just, you know, a sheet of quarter inch steel can be used for tons of stuff. You know, it can fabricate all sorts of different, you know, things that you may need. So
yeah.
For $25 for a 4x3 foot sheet, you know, that was a really good deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, remember that, like that piece of 16 gauge or whatever it was, you know, so that's like 32nd inch or something like that. You know, that's in the bottom of the fire pit was like $65 or something just for that, you know, that ridiculous. Piece is like little. Yeah. Right. So having like that, I was like, yes, I'll buy the whole thing. Let him know how come get it. I'm happy. So yeah, Sean and I went early up on Saturday morning, went and picked it up. It's cool. The guy we got it from was an older guy. Well, not maybe in his 60s or something. He was, he had a bunch of stuff because he was cleaning out a machine shop that was like his father-in-law's or something, or maybe his father or something. It had been like, they, you know, kind of pulling stuff out of it. So he had some other stuff there that he was, you know, selling as well. But if I had a bigger shop, or if I, you know, if I was more a machinist, he had like a big, horizontal bandsaw for cutting steel. He had a, what's it called? A torch track. So doing like, oxyacetylene torch to cut steel. He had a track system where you could set it up and then you run it along electric. It like runs electrically and cuts along a straight line, which is pretty cool. And he had this big, like big brass hammer, which is really cool.
That would be a little overkill for the,
right.
You'd be cutting 2x4s with it.
with a plasma torch. Burn his stuff down.
Yeah.
Using the big horizontal bandsaw to cut, yeah, like trim.
You'd be cutting your the pins to your knives, the little brass pins.
Yeah. So he had some stuff, but we were happy to get the steel. It was probably I don't know, maybe 200 pounds or 250 pounds or something for that sheet. So we just lifted it up together, threw it in the truck, and then I cut it and took half of that, lifted it, walked over and put it into on top of the table in the shop in the smithy.
Yeah.
So.
I want something like that for the back of my truck for winter.
Oh yeah.
You know, for snow driving, just something, a couple hundred pounds.
Right.
Maybe I'll get one of those. I've been looking at it depends. You know, the bed extender.
Yeah.
Things, you know, that go out. They look like a cage on its side.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
And then when you flip it inside, it holds stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So then I could probably drop some sandbags in that. That'd be cool.
Oh yeah, that's not a bad idea. Have it flipped on the inside so it holds it at the end.
Mm-hmm. And then just you know, have a stack of sandbags, whatever, 25-50 pounds each, and you can pile in as much as you want, 400 pounds, 500 pounds, and take off.
Get that traction in the back, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean you have 4-wheel drive too, so you don't have to worry about too much. But you know,
even with that back end, the trucks will go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one problem that I've had. And actually, I think a couple years ago, I had a couple big logs in there. Like I just took some big logs and threw them in the back of my truck. I've done other stuff. I've done a bunch of different things to just put some weight in the truck to get a little traction. Fortunately, you know, we don't get tons of snow here in Maryland, so we don't really have to deal with it all that long, but it is nice to have something to get that weight. And, you know, at least this is what I've heard and read and have done. You want to get that weight like over the wheels and not in the very back if you can avoid it. So,
right. I mean,
but
yeah, you know, it's still better than nothing.
Better than nothing. Yeah.
But, who was about that? I was watching, what's that vet show? Doctor. Anyway, he drives around in, I forget where he's from, somewhere flat in the middle of the country. And he's like, I love driving around in snow. It's easy. It's great. I'm like, yeah, you have no hills. driving flat, in snow with no hills, it's easy.
Yeah.
You start to slide, you just spin into another flat area and stop. Like, oh, that's not the scary part. It's going up and down winding hills. That's the tricky bit.
Not being able to stop. Hitting your brakes and nothing happens and you just keep on going. Then you're like, okay.
There we go.
Mercy of when traction comes back and I can turn again.
it would be fun on the plains. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Just gun it.
Yeah, you can slide around. End up in another flat area. Cool. No trees.
Yeah. No big deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no trees.
It must be tough.
Yeah, we were driving up to pick that
Dr. Pole. Steel up. Dr. Pole, sorry.
Yeah. We were kind of going through some country road and back roads and stuff, and I was actually thinking how much I enjoy that about Maryland. That there's a lot of like rolling hills and, you know, it's not like super mountainous, but everywhere, all the country, it's lots of hills. So you're always kind of winding up and down and going through woods and coming out into fields and then back into woods. And, you know, it's nice scenic driving, you know, as opposed to, like you said, large, like the majority of our country and the majority of, you know, Canada. There are just so many areas of long, flat, you know, like nothing.
Yeah.
It's one of those, it's like weird to me. I think about that occasionally. Like, I wonder how that would feel to be in a place that's just all flat, just driving.
Yeah, it seems a little time. Like an acre of land with hills feels like a lot.
Because
you're like, I have this hillside and this, and then over there I can't really see, and there's some woods there, and then down into that valley there. An acre,
right,
in the middle of flat farmland of nothingness, feel like you got nothing.
Right, exactly. Like, oh, there's the end of my property over there. I can see it.
Right.
And there it is there. Right, yeah. The mystery isn't there.
Yeah.
And the, like, you know, having the woods, you know, you have, like, the area of your property is all wooded, right? Then that feels like it has some significance to it. And then you have, like, a field area and then your lawns and blah, 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 whatever. But,
yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the really nice things about growing up in the country here in Maryland is that we had a decent amount of property that, you know, was our parents' farm. And so we were able to have that kind of, you know, you get the pastures and then the cornfields and then the woods and all that was all on our property, different areas. And it's fun to grow up in a place like that.
Yeah. So speaking of country folk, I got a quick unrelated qualm.
Okay.
So we, 4th of July, we went up because in Maryland, you can't buy good fireworks in Maryland. You know, it's all ground stuff. You can't really have some fun, some dangerous fun. Right. So you got to go over the PA line and buy your stuff. And we drove up there and got stuff. And there's a cracker barrel nearby. And I don't know, if you don't know, it's just like a country kitchen style. You can get breakfast and things, and they bring you little bowls of food. It's good stuff, and it's cheap. It is what it is, but it's a chain. And if you're on the East Coast, and I don't know how far west it goes, but you can find them off of most highways.
Right, yep.
So we're like, yeah, hey, we'll go get some breakfast at Cracker Barrel. And we go in, and we sit down. And then this little old couple comes up, and they're like one of these couples that seem to have stopped talking to each other years ago, you know, and they just sit there in silence and they do their things, organize this. I got the rolls. I do this. I butter this, you know, and they're, Total silence. I was like, yeah, that's kind of funny. Cute old couple. Look at them. And then she gets a call, and it's a FaceTime. And then she goes on to talk for about 10 minutes with her grandchildren.
Oh, my gosh.
In the middle of the restaurant. And that drives me up the wall. And I think it does to 95% of the population of the world.
Yeah, right.
But there's 5% who do not care if you hear that they're talking to someone. And there's some people who will do it, out in the street or walking around. And that's annoying, but that's not as bad.
Yeah, at least you can pass them and keep going. Right. You know, like, you don't have to deal with it.
You're like, dang, they're loud. Why? I don't need to hear about their love life. That's weird that they would yell about that on the phone. But
right.
A restaurant, and like, she's FaceTiming, and she's like, the kids are yelling, and she's old, so she can't hear them. So she's like, what are you doing? And what family raised you that you decided? Or how are you not embarrassed, which is always a thing that you think
right.
of, or I think
yeah,
of.
Exactly.
I'm like, how are you not embarrassed that, what are you doing? So, of course, then I just hate this little old lady the rest of the time. And then and then they leave with, I'm sure, which was like a 25-cent tip, because they're those type of people. Like, what are you doing? And why, for like 10 minutes? Oh, and my wife's just looking at you like, don't say anything, please. Don't. I'm like, I need to say something.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, that's a lack of common courtesy. You know, it's
what
like,
are you doing?
That's, you don't get, I mean, unless you're at a bar, you don't get loud when you're out eating. You know, you have a conversation.
No.
You have a conversation that, unless you're sitting right next to another couple, you might hear some of their conversation because it's conversational tone, right? You're not like talking
right.
loud. You're not talking.
Right.
You don't have to whisper, but you just have a normal conversation. You know, it's like.
Yeah. But you don't pick up your phone on FaceTime and talk to your grandchildren for 10 minutes about gibberish and their birthday. And like, no, if they try to FaceTime, you hang up or you go, hey, I'm at a restaurant. I'll call you later. Love you. Bye.
Right.
Like,
that's,
what are you doing?
That's like the one time you don't answer your phone, or you say, hey, we're eating dinner. Let me call you back when I'm done. That's like the only situation that
right.
I can think of. I mean, there's obviously other ones, but where you're like, hey, I'm doing this thing. Let me call you back when I'm done. Like, dinner is the thing, right? You know, it's like,
right.
Jeez. Oh,
if you wanted me to talk to you at dinner, someone will have to have died.
Right.
And then we'll chat
right,
about
exactly.
it.
Yeah.
But your grandson's birthday is not under that umbrella of death.
Right. anytime I call someone or someone calls and they're like, oh, sorry, you're having dinner. I'll call you back. Like, that's always the thing.
Right.
It's like, okay, you're eating or, you know, obviously
and that's the majority of people. And obviously there was a restaurant full of people who weren't doing that.
Right. Yeah.
But my 9-month-old baby was being quieter than this 65-year-old hag. Gosh.
Man.
That's my qualm for the day.
Nice. I was thinking earlier we were talking about hills and stuff, and Matt Brown actually sent me a message on Instagram. Matt does all the music for the channel, if you guys don't know, and he joined us on the podcast a while back, which is awesome. You should go listen to that episode if you haven't, because he plays some live music and he does the intro song. He does all sorts of good stuff for us. So check that out. But Matt sent me a message and it was like, hey, you guys should try this. It would be really cool for the channel. And it was just a real quick video of a girl shooting her bow, like called like, which full send. So basically you just draw and shoot at 45 degree angles, full draw as far as you can shoot. And she just shot it like into the woods just to like see the arrow fly. But I thought that'd be really cool video and something we've kind of talked about and thought about before, but to see how far those bows will shoot that we've made.
Now, I just thought of this before you go on.
Okay.
I kind of want to do this thumbnail, but it's a little clickbaity kind of like, you know, when people point to things in thumbnails and say me
right.
Or this small, like they bring attention
right, right.
to something
yeah,
that they
yeah,
want
yeah.
you to see. A cool thumbnail I think would be the buried arrow is in the foreground, and right. way up on the hill is you, Tiny.
Oh, yeah.
From how far you shot like... it. And then an arrow saying me, like pointing yeah. to you, and you know, your little dot.
So, right.
But I don't know if we usually don't do that type of thumbnail, but maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, it's one of those things, like, the thumbnail is only there to draw people in to want to read more and then hopefully watch your video.
Yeah.
So that's like, its pure purpose is to just give you that first, like, oh, that's what I see. Okay, let me read the title. Okay, right. The title, that sounds cool. Okay, now I want to click on it and watch it.
But
so
it know, also I, it yeah. also gives you the first taste of what style,
right? Yes,
what these people are about. That is why we have tried to stay away from that stuff,
right?
Yeah. I mean, maybe if it could be a proven thing that it brings in 50% more traffic, we'd probably do it,
right?
But as far we try to keep it simple, clean, right. nice text that just explains.
If yeah, there's you see, wait, you like, see the we've finished done a product, few, yeah.
We've done a few questions, like, is this 200 years old, or has right. it burned me? Has it, like, but those are the actual things we talk about, and it's usually not too clickbaity, just because.
Right. And we try to do that with, like, the words on the thumbnail have to explain a little bit, then the words on the title have to explain a little bit, and then, so we have, like, thumbnail, and I guess it's just thumbnail and title.
Yeah.
You know, and then obviously the description of the video. But we always talk about that before we put it out. Like, what do we want the thumbnail to say? What do we want the title to say? And we do a combination of two things that then will give you enough information to understand what you're going to be watching. So the thumbnail yeah. says a little bit, you know, about this. And then the title will say a little bit more about what it is. Yeah. So I think that'd be fun, you know, because that shows like it is yeah, a distance thing. Yeah.
I thought right. that would be kind of cool.
Right.
So you see yeah. the arrow buried in the field. So, yeah, what we wanted to do, and I think I've brought this up to you, Dust, before, where we should do a couple. Well, at first I was doing like, hey, trick shots, even though obviously that's what a lot of people have done.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just trying to think of more things we could do with the bow, because bows take so long to make and right, yeah. make a video for, that once we're done with them, this is one of the things that we can still use and do other interesting things with.
Right.
Hence why we shot on the range with Sean and stuff like that.
Right.
But yeah, what we're probably going to do is compare, not only do the, what does she call it? The
Full send.
Full send, right. The right, longest yeah. shot you can do with your bow.
Right.
And we're going to do it on a big hill, like you said,
yeah.
and try some from the top and then from the bottom, see the distance difference, see yeah. if there's difference on how you aim and how you feel. I mean, we should probably get a target too.
Right. Yeah.
You know, maybe have a target down there, just a stick with a bucket on it. You know, I don't necessarily yeah. want to cut out a picture of a person, then people call the cops on us because we're shooting at someone in the field. The most dangerous game. Human.
That would make a good video. Cops roll up.
Oh, they took us away. We're so dangerous. Yeah, maybe we should do it.
Yeah, right. Just shoot a bunch of guns in the air first and then start shooting just to draw them in. Bah, 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 bah,
bah. Gunshots? No, officer.
No, not at all.
Leave me alone, man. Maybe resist, resist. Shots. I don't think you could hear a bow, officer.
Yeah. But yeah, I do think that would be cool. That'll be interesting to shoot from, yeah, the top of a long hill down, you know, that kind of high ground versus low ground, and see what that would do, and that would look like.
I think we should also take our guesses.
Right.
Like, I can put one out. Like, I'll walk way down there, and then you right. can also, we can both yeah. do it.
Okay.
And you'll be like, you can be like, this is Devin's. This is how far he thinks I can shoot it, and this is how right. far I think. And then yeah. you aim at one of those.
Right.
Then yeah. we see how far we get, if we're surprised or not, and then go right. back and go the other way, shoot from down, see how far we can get
yeah.
up.
Yeah, no, that'd be cool. I think I just think that'd be really fun. I've been wanting to do that for a long time anyway.
It feels good to let it loose, yeah.
Yeah, because those bows, I'm always, obviously I'm shooting at targets and stuff, but... And there are a few times where I can shoot long shots, but it's never like a full draw. It's always right. controlled. you know, like 200 yards or something. That's definitely like a long shot, but it's a controlled long shot.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get some. We might have to finally pull the trigger on that 4K GoPro or put a phone right down there, because we need some shots.
Yeah, right.
Coming in. Right. Oh, I can send the drone up. Oh, this will be fun.
Ooh, yeah, that sounds awesome. I know. I'm flying by. Yeah, that'd be awesome. But have it fly down, or like, yeah, have it like going down and like searching for the arrow. Come in,
yeah.
Find it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I wonder what the field is at this point. The field we have in mind, I can't remember what's growing in it right now. It's low right now.
Mm.
So it might be a good time.
You think?
So we'll have to,
I guess we could wait till winter.
Yeah, right. It'll definitely
be. I mean, it'd be cool to do, but yeah, we don't want to trounce around in there.
Yeah, good call. Right. Yeah, an actual, like, a field that has, I think it's got, like, winter wheat in it right now, which is, like, you know, 2 feet high or something. So,
yeah.
A foot and a half high. Yeah. Yeah, right. I guess that's honest. We don't want to trounce around in there. Actually.
I mean, we can do it. We can do it on our own, but.
Right, yeah.
Put a video out. You know.
No, that'd be cool.
That would be fun.
And it'll be kind of cool too to test the different bows, like the different weights, the first Osage bow that I made on the video on the channel was, I think, like 55 pounds probably, and then the Hickory that I made more recently was actually maybe. Maybe it's like, maybe the Osage is 60s or maybe even 60 plus, and the Hickory might be 55 or 57, something like that. I'll have to test them again, but it would be interesting to try it with a bunch of different bows, because I have two Hickory bows and two Osage bows that I use often. So out of those four bows, it'd be kind of interesting. And then, you know, we could have like Corinne come join us, and maybe Nicole, you know, shoot their bows to see how far they go. Be kind of fun.
Yeah, no, that would be cool. And we could pull out Dad has a crossbow.
Oh, right, yeah.
See how far that bolt goes.
Right, yeah. They may go for
lose that
than we want, right? Exactly. Fortunately, where we're thinking about, there's woods behind it. There's no like houses for another probably 1,000 yards. So, I did think about it when you sent me that message. I was looking at some videos, and there were a couple pretty interesting videos of people shooting stuff. There was one guy who shot a it was like the fastest bow on the market, something like 425 feet per second, which I don't know how that relates to draw weight, but he was shooting his long bow was like a 55 pound, and then he was also shooting like a compound bow, which is like 120,
right,
you know, with the cams and stuff, and then he was going up to these like crossbow longbow, you know, crossbow bows type things, and I think his further shot was like 1500 feet, so
dang,
you know. Yeah, exactly. So it's like five. What's that? No, that's not five. That's
no.
Three.
I don't know.
Like three. Yeah, it's a long way, you know. But like, yeah, like 500 yards, you know, over like five football fields. That's a long way. So, but I think the longbows and stuff are shooting out at, you know, I forget 400 yards or something, or 400 feet, 500 feet, something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, 300 or 400.
That'd be cool. And, yeah, we're talking about maybe getting our cousin Ben on the video. We had him on the podcast.
Yeah.
Maybe we could give a little floating head of, you know, I think some historical reference of high ground and archers and how you would set up and blah, blah, blah. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah. Yeah, we'd have to figure out how we could work that in. But that would be pretty interesting. Just have him, like, our medieval specialist talking about now, right. Blah blah blah. Would, you know, during this time, this you know, army had the high ground, and this one didn't, and they won. And, you know,
that'd be cool. That'd be cool to have over top of you and everyone, you know, setting up and getting things set up. And
yeah,
that'd be cool.
Yeah, we'd have to reach out to him and see, like, you know, tell him what we're doing, and then ask him if he has some, like, maybe even like an interesting story, right? Because maybe he's like telling a story about a battle, You know, that was one because of high ground or low ground or something, or, you know, and then like
or,
that might be kind of fun to overlay, you know, or like, you know, in this battle, the high ground won and the, you know, archers did this, blah, 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 or something like that, you know, it'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Because he does know a lot about, you know, some of those significant battles.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah. So we got some fun stuff coming up. We have some fun guests that we're going to have on the podcast coming up as well. So I've been talking to some people and getting some people interested. We're hopefully over the next couple weeks, we'll have a few different people on, obviously, and over the next couple months as well, get some guests on to hear what some other people have to say about making things, whether that's actual, like, you know, items or content for making things as well. That's always fun, having like other content creators on, cause that's a different conversation. You know, that's something obviously that we do. But like talking about making, but also content creation at the same time, it's always kind of interesting. So that'd be fun.
It won't all be Cracker Barrel stories, I promise.
Yeah. I reached out to, I won't say who specifically, but another person to ask him to come on. And he was definitely interested in coming on. I mean, I'll tell you, but, for the fans, I'll keep it a secret, but his explanation of, what did he say? He said, it sounds frighteningly exciting to come on the podcast. I was like, oh, that's a funny explanation. I like
frighteningly
that.
Exciting.
It's frighteningly exciting. So, yeah. So we got some fun people who are going to be on.
Cool.
Debbie, you have any recommendations today?
Yeah, I about a week ago, I think I read an article, Dave Grohl talking about what their next project was, and it's a cover album of the Bee Gees called The DGs. And they do Bee Gees songs, and Dave Grohl sings in falsetto, and it's awesome.
What?
And Bee Gees, man, I mean, they do get like a tough rap for being like the staying alive kind of disco people, but they wrote great songs. I mean, and it's a family of, you know, the guys, it's just great songwriters. Right. But yeah, Foo Fighters doing a cover album.
Nice. That's
and I haven't listened to all of them, but I listened to a few. It's awesome. It's so good. So the DGs, YouTube it.
That's great. I love Dave Grohl. You know, he's like one of those dudes that just does whatever he wants and has fun with it.
Yeah, I'm a little afraid that we're gonna find out he's done something horrific, like a Bill Cosby thing. Like everybody loved Bill Cosby until no one loved Bill Cosby because it turned out he's a monster. Dave Grohl is so cool and such a great, seems like a giving, friendly, loving life type of guy. That I think there's something buried deep in his closet that we don't know about. I'm worried.
We'll just never know. And not the same person, but it just reminds me of like Travis Pastrana. You know, I follow him on Instagram.
Right.
He's always like doing fun stuff. He's like racing boats, racing cars, and motorcycles, and then doing like, you know, action sports and whatever.
I think one of my old recommendations was the Gymkhana.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maryland version. It's amazing. Yeah, you've seen
so
it, right?
Good. Yeah, it's so good.
Him, I mean, going through Annapolis, I almost went down and saw him jump one of the canals in Annapolis, and I should have gone, but I just didn't.
That would have been so cool, yeah.
But he jumps, he hits this hill, and speaking of, like, hilly Maryland.
Yeah.
And he hits this hill, and he goes so far. It's insane.
That is
but
crazy.
All the Gymkhanas with Ken Block and those guys are great. But then Travis Pastrana took this one over in his homes in Maryland, and what a great he's another person. I hope he's a fellow Marylander, so I hope he doesn't mess it up because I want him to be around.
Yeah, and I'd love to have him on the podcast. That'd be super fun just to like talk to him about all sorts of cool stuff. I did reach out to him, but you know he's one of those people who has like.
Well, there's
hundreds of thousands of followers and stuff. So
millions,
I'm sure he's
probably
getting tons of the messages a day. So we'll see. If anybody knows Travis who's listening to the podcast, send him a message. Let him know we like to have him on the podcast. Just talk and chat with him about all sorts of fun stuff. Loving Maryland. All right. That's true. My recommendation this week is Chris Killinger. Chris Killinger is an axe man. He makes some really awesome handles, which he sells. You can get Killinger handles, but he also is an axe collector. Has a podcast that he does with I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head right now. Shoot, but called the Axe Hounds podcast, and it's a really cool podcast, which they took some time off, but I think they're back. But he just posted some stuff on Instagram and on his YouTube channel about the history of the Norland Axe Company. So Norland is an axe company that started in the 60s and went up until the mid 80s and then stopped. So there's kind of just that small time frame, that like 20-year time frame that they were in existence. And they're a pretty fun, like popular axe company. The way they advertised their stuff was all about like camping and getting back out into nature. And they were like, you know, you had like the camper and the hiker and the, you know, all these like different names for their different axe, different size axes and stuff. And, so he just put together kind of a history and kind of a timeline of when all the different axes were available, you know, through that timeline. And that's just pretty fascinating to me. One of the very first axes I ever collected was a Norland, a small Norland hatchet that I got for $5 at a yard sale. I didn't even know what it was at the time. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. It says Norland on one side. All right. But, you know, it comes to turn out there, all of Norlands are pretty collectible just because they're a small time period and they're in fashion right now. You know, they're not a super awesome steel. You know, they're like a 60s, 70s, 80s steel. Like they're cool. And, you know, but they're kind of there's a market for them. They're just popular. So, and they've been popular for a while.
They have a nice logo.
They do, yeah. Real cool logo and has a really cool history and branding and whatnot. So,
L-E-I-F.
Yeah, Leif Bacchus.
That's it.
Right? Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, I couldn't remember. I can see his face. Got a beard. I can see him in my head.
That's a different name, so I'll give that to you. That's...
Yeah, so Chris Killinger and Leif Bacchus do the Axe Hounds podcast, which is really good. If you're interested in axes and, you know, they talk about all sorts of stuff, collectors, and Chris and I have kind of talked back and forth and, you know, commented on each other's videos and stuff for years being an axe collector and, you know, an axe junkie myself. So if you're interested in axes, you know, check out his latest video just put up, which is unraveling the mystery of the Norland Axe Company and all the timeline of their existence. Pretty interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, man. All right. Well, that's it. It's funny. I feel like we haven't recorded in a while, even though we were recording early now, and we recorded early last time as well, which was the 4th of July episode. But yeah, so... It feels like it's been a while because we're kind of off of our normal schedule, but it's always
fun chatting. When you're back, you'll be back from vacation, yep. And who knows who we'll have on. It all depends who we meet and see, and it should be it's going to be a fun next few weeks, so we'll have plenty to talk about.
Heck yeah, that's right.
Yeah, next time you'll be back from the Timber Inn and vacation, all types of stuff, so we can discuss that.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be good. I'm excited to go up and... meet a bunch of people and hang out and
that's one thing we've never done is gone to like, or you know, we've never gone to like an event where there'll be other content creators.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Which is kind of crazy after what, 4 years, we've never really other than Alex from Outdoors 55. We haven't really. So it'll be cool. We keep saying on this, we're going to keep trying, keep doing it. That's half the reason we're doing this podcast, is to reach out and talk to people and just build and make friendships and have a good time in this community that is there. And we're going to keep doing it.
Yeah. And, you know, having like meeting people through, online and, you know, talking is one thing, and having people in the podcast is also another thing, but, you know, actually meeting people and getting to kind of really know, you know, learn someone, have a conversation, be around people. It's going to be interesting. So I'll be up at the Timber Inn up at Blackthorn Resort up in New York on Saturday morning. I'll be there probably around, I don't know, I would say 9:30, 10 o'clock, something like that. I'll be there, and then I'll be there till the early afternoon before I head back. But I'll be there. Justin Dietrich will be there, and a bunch of other people. He's putting on the Timber Inn, so we're going to prep a bunch of – they're going to be prepping a bunch of wood and stuff to get ready for the actual Maker Camp, which will be in October, which we will be there as well. Deb and I will both be there. So if you're in the area this weekend, head up to Blackthorn Resort. And actually, when this podcast comes out, it'll be Friday. I will be there on Saturday.
Oh, so hurry up.
Yeah. So if you're in New York or northeast of the USA and you want to come out and meet some people and hang out, it's going to be fun because it's less formal. It's just a free event. Like, hey, come on out. If you're around, come help out, lend a hand, hang out with some people and do some prep work for these timbers that we're going to put together. So that way then they're ready to build a structure when they do the Maker Camp.
So. And, Dustin will have set up a, knife and axe signing booth. He'll sign any knife or axe you bring in, and
yeah, exactly.
For a $20 fee, you can get your thing signed up.
A small amount of $20 one time,
and 50% goes to me, so I expect to get some of that back.
Yeah, there will be no record of how many signings I do. No one wanted anything.
It was terrible. We didn't have any fun at all. You made money, didn't you? Hey!
Go back with axes and like... All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening. It's been a blast. If you don't already, please go over and subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Art of Craftsmanship. Check us out there. Obviously, everything we talk about is all related back to the channel most of the time. So that's what we love to do and love to talk to you guys about. You can also follow us on Instagram, The Art of Craftsmanship and The Art of Camera Guy. And if you want to support the channel and support what we do in the podcast, you can go over to Patreon and support us there, patreon.com/The Art of Craftsmanship. And if you are listening and you would like to support us or sponsor the podcast, we're also looking for some sponsors. So Deb and I are going to be reaching out to some people, try to get some sponsors on, and someone who, you know, feels like you're interested in what we do. We'd always love to have you reach out to us as well. So you get, anyone can always send us an email at theartofcraftsmanship@gmail.com. All right, everybody. Thank you all so much for listening. Devin, it was a blast.
Yes, yes.
We will all talk to you next time.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.